Thank you for coming out.
Okay. Thank you for coming out. Welcome. My name is Dubs Weinblatt. My pronouns are they, them, theirs. And I am so excited to be here for our sixth season of the Thank You for Coming Out podcast. In 2015, I founded the queer improv show, Thank You for Coming Out, or TIFCO, as we call it. And it is now one of the longest running queer improv shows in New York City. During that show, our storytellers would share their coming out stories, and then our improvisers would bring them to life. Our podcast is a little different. We still have a storyteller share their stories, but instead of folks improvising, we talk about them. And I am so beyond honored and thrilled and tickled and grateful to have my guest here with me today, especially during Trans Week of Visibility. Raquel Willis, she, her, is an award-winning author, activist, and media strategist dedicated to Black transgender liberation. She has held groundbreaking posts, including director of communications for Miss Foundation for Women, executive editor of Out Magazine, and national organizer for Transgender Law Center. She co-founded Transgender Week of Visibility in Action and currently serves as an executive producer for iHeartMedia's Outspoken, the president of the Solutions Not Punishments Collaborative's executive board, and is a WNBA Social Justice Council member. Her debut memoir, The Risk It Takes to Bloom on Life and Liberation, was released in November 2023 via St. Martin's Press. Raquel, welcome.
Hi, thank you.
Yes, I'm so honored and thrilled to have to be in conversation with you and to get to connect. This is people always ask, like, who are your dream guests to come on the pod? And you're always top of the list. So this is this is a moment for me.
Don't butter me up.
Have you been, I know we chatted before the episode started that you are in Brooklyn. Have you been enjoying the beautiful weather?
I have, yeah. It's been in and out as it is, you know, during the spring, but it's largely been good pockets of sunshine, I guess. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is there a favorite thing you like to do in New York when the sun's out?
Oh, when the sun's out. If I can make it, you know, out close to the Hudson, that's nice, just to like be near the water and it's not freezing. Mm-hmm. Prospect Park is always cute. Mm-hmm. I think I want to start biking more, so we'll see if I can do that, you know, spring and summer of this year.
Yeah, please wear a helmet.
Yes, yeah. The thing is like the hair issue, but I think if I just slick it down each time like this, then I'll be fine.
Okay, good. yeah, I love being by the water. I was just in the West Village a few days ago and saw that they, like, right near Little Island, there's like a little beach there now. Have you seen that or heard about it?
I feel like I've heard of it, but I haven't seen it in person yet. No.
Yeah, I walked by and I was like, this is so cute. There's like sand and Adirondack chairs and it really looks like a beach. And I was like, this is so cute. I hope it stays cool and chill.
Yeah.
okay, so we all have multiple coming out stories, multiple coming into self stories. And so I'd love to hear one of those moments that you'd like to share with us.
Okay. So the first major coming out for me was to my mom. I was 14. We were leaving this volunteer moment. We used to volunteer with a local community of disabled folks at a nearby medical and mental hospital. And we were part of the Red Cross, and it was cool. You know, it was like this monthly party that we would throw, and it was always fun. But we were leaving that. There had been a moment where this kid had called another kid the F slur. And I remember watching my mom scold the kid for being, you know, offensive and rude. And then I was like, oh, okay, I guess she down. So maybe I need to say something. And so I told her in the car. I remember it as raining, but my mom is like, maybe I'm just being dramatic. Mm. But I remember telling her, and it was so hard to kind of get the words out, and I was so scared. You know, I knew I couldn't put those words back into the box. But, you know, I told her, I was like, I'm gay. I don't want you to think differently of me. And she, I have to say, responded pretty well for a very traditional Southern Black Catholic woman, in like 2000, I don't know, I guess it was like 2005. So that was my like first major coming out, and she was like, well, this will just be something we'll have to work through together. And that started a life of me, I guess, coming out as other things later down the road. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, thank you for sharing that. I read about this. So I read your, we'll talk about this more in a little bit, but I read your memoir, The Risk It Takes to Bloom, and I could not put it down. And I just related to so much of your story, and specifically this story that you just shared around the first piece, which I think a lot of queer people do. And I'm curious your experience with it, of kind of like testing the waters of like looking for cues, looking for how are they going to react to this? That's so resonant with me. And I'm curious in your work now, if you've had other people share with you feeling resonant with that moment.
I haven't had as much of a discussion about this moment. And I think because with coming out and especially being trans, it's like, obviously you end up having multiple coming outs. And so the later ones kind of supersede the first one. But honestly, the first one is the one that probably takes the most energy, because you're inevitably younger and, you know, all of these different things. So the stakes are just different. So I have a lot of love for my younger self. Shout out to my therapist for making me think, even now, you know, in my 30s, about how much bravery that took. Because I think you kind of lose that understanding of, again, what the stakes were, all those years ago. So thank you for giving love to that moment. And I think the coming out process, or the inviting in process, as people say, it's a very beautiful thing, and no one doesn't like queer folks. Like, you can come out as a lot of things, but I think queer and trans folks, we just have our own kind of grips on that process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm just thinking about what you just said around the first one takes the most energy. I remember I came out as a lesbian when I was 20, and just so similar to what you're saying, like, I can't put the words back in this box once they've come out. And I remember first, like, I told a friend, and I couldn't even say it out loud. I had to write it on a post-it because I was too scared to even say it, the words out loud to another human being, even though I had practiced in my car alone before. But I remember then, once I had like told a few people, I was like, now I have to do it. Because before it was kind of like not hypothetical, but it wasn't actualized yet, because I was only just thinking about it and I hadn't told anybody anything. And then once I had said it, I was like, now I have to like do it. And that part felt even harder. Yeah.
I mean, there's the doing part of it for, I think, a lot of us when we share an identity, and especially when you're younger, but not always, there's a feeling that you have to embody this identity in a different way, or you feel like you have to catch up, you know, for lost time. And, you know, we could be a little extra, honey, you know, like, I love a good flag, but maybe everything doesn't have to have the flag on it. It's so maybe true. We can let it still be a treat. But that, you know, I think that's just like a quick little cute thing. But I think sometimes when we're integrating this new part of our identity that we've shared, it starts to maybe supersede everything else. And we're so expansive, right? So we got to give love to all of the pieces of ourselves too.
Yeah. Yeah. Something that you had that you wrote in your book. I forget the exact moment around it, but you said that you were sensitive at a certain point in your transition, and any critique felt like a slight and a transphobic rejection. And I feel like that ties to what you were just saying too, of just like of trying to integrate ourselves. And I remember coming into my transness and changing my name and my pronouns, and just feeling like every single thing anyone said to me was a personal attack. And it was, I think of it as like a pendulum swinging, and I was swinging this way to like figure it out. And it's like, I got to find that center again of not everything A is about me, and B, not everything is transphobic. But there really is that the pun intended transitional period of figuring out how to integrate and how other people interact with us. And I giggled when you said about not everything has to be rainbows, because that is like such a like an integral part of my like coming out ness when I in my 20s, like everything was rainbow, everything. And so now I have to like consciously be like, it doesn't, I don't have to have a rainbow sticker on my laptop. It's okay. And so it's
Yeah.
like just like getting used to that is funny.
And I think that there's also this, and maybe it's less this now just because culture is different, but I think what it meant, when I was coming into my queerness, at least openly in the late 2000s, there was a way that like you wanted to be able to signal who you were. Because we just didn't have a culture yet where people were talking as freely. And that's not every case, right? We still have those scenarios where it's like, should I say something? Or, I think those moments still happen. But now I think I've found joy in the nuances and the winks and nods, right? Like if somebody says something, that is really only inside queer knowledge, and you're just kind of like, oh, I see you, and it's just, out in passing. Like I love and cherish those moments now in a different way. Yeah, so I love that because that's also kind of like historic, like I just think about our ancestors, how many of them like only lived in the nuances and the nudges and the winks. And so when we can find joy in those little moments now, it just feels like this nod to like the enduring spirit of queerness.
Yeah, I think I'm in a, excuse me, I'm in a place of my like coming into self of moving away. I think again, just I think I'm just saying the same thing that I just said of moving away from the more explicit and more into the like the winks and nods. But it for whatever reason, it feels harder for me to stop being so like out about it. Because I think for I don't want to lose. I don't want people to assume that I'm not queer. I think that's my, I want everyone to always know at any point in time that I'm queer. And so I want to make, I don't know how, I want to just always flag it.
Interesting. I don't
Yeah.
always, do I? I don't know that I always want people to know that I'm queer, which is interesting. And I know that's a little controversial, but I think what I'm more interested in is the possibility that I could be queer. And I think also the possibility that people out and about could be queer. That excites me. Because sometimes, honey, I might not want the wrong person to know.
That's very fair.
And I think that that is, we all have differing degrees of dealing with that. Because we just, don't live in a culture that fully is where it needs to be. But I do love the idea of us at least having a culture that the possibility of queerness for any and everyone is there.
Yeah, I love that too. So I would love to talk about your book because even though I've talked about it a little bit, but I again could not put it down. It is so incredible, and I'll say relatable. I'm sure everyone can find something, but like just so much of your story as a queer and trans person for me was like, I could have written this too with like insert they them, you know, whatever it is. Just incredible. And I'm curious, like, what inspired you to write this book, and what was that process like for you?
Yeah, writing this book was really the culmination of feeling isolated as a kid and wishing as I got older that I had more access to stories about queer and trans people and Black queer and trans people. And it was also the result of being laid off from Out Magazine, which I talk about in the book, and the pandemic hitting around that time, and finally having the space to process my life in a different way. You know, so I had ambitions of writing a memoir back in college, like in 2013, when I thought, you know, and up until that point, right, the story was this transition that I had embarked on during college and this kind of journey to that point. But of course, you know, culture moves and shifts, and then visibility started to happen. And, you know, I had all of these different opportunities that showed up. And so next thing you know, you wake up and it's 2020, and the story is much bigger than that original one I thought I had all those years ago. So yeah, I mean, that's just where we find ourselves. And I'm interested in telling more stories, fiction, nonfiction, all that stuff. But I think I really needed to get a grapple on this first.
Did you was any part of the writing cathartic? Did you, as you were writing, did you unlock other memories and you're like, I totally forgot about that until XYZ?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still remembering things, because that is just life, right? As like these little moments that pop up. And, you know, they're not all in the book. You know, the book can only cover so much. Like I was thinking the other day as I was talking to my sister about this aunt that I have, who actually, she came through to my book event in Atlanta, which was really exciting. But I remember being like 6 or 7, and we were all around my great aunt's table, and they were just like grilling me about my life. Like, they were just enthralled, you know. And they were like, someone was like, do you have a girlfriend? And I was like, no. And then this aunt was like, boyfriend? And I was like, no, you know, just like very, even though I knew I had crushes on boys at that point, obviously I had a bit of a flair that would even give her the inkling to like ask that. But you know, that was a moment, you know, I could include in the book, but I didn't think about it during the process. So it's just funny that those moments come back. But yeah, overall, I would say it was a cathartic process. I feel like a different person now than I did when I started it. And each process of writing a book is its own thing. You know, there's a particular struggle of trying to get the original story out. There's a particular struggle of trying to revise that story and edit, and what things say, what things go, what things need to be framed a different way. With memoir, you know, there's this part of the process that I took on around how do I have the difficult conversations I need to have so that my conscience can be as clear as possible when I share these stories. Oh, and how can I share these stories in a way that they won't overly and negatively impact the lives of the people that I share, you know, experiences with. So that's the thing. And then, of course, it being out in the world has been its own process, and processing the process in front of folks is a thing. So, but I enjoy this space that I'm in and the ability to do this on this level. And I'm so grateful to all the folks who've been supporting and reading.
Yeah, that's incredible. Yeah. How would you say, what's like the biggest, you said you feel different from before and now, what would you say the biggest change or difference is?
I think this process just really kind of cracked me open a bit. Mm-hmm. And I think that while I feel like I was vulnerable before, it's different now. Like there's a different kind of vulnerability because now, you know, so much of my story is a part of the official record of who I am to the world. So it's interesting to now be this person who some people know the ins and outs of my life. And there's kind of a different starting point, right? Like there are folks that, you know, so much of my story is not coming from a place of being a stranger because they've been intimately in it with me after reading the book. Mm-hmm. So that part is interesting. Even people that I've known for years and been friends with being like, I didn't know, you know, we had so many similarities, or that you went through this, or, you know, as I was reading it, I wanted to be able to hold you and hug you because it made me feel this way. It's just, it's wild that, you know, this art of writing can have that impact on people. And I know it's had that impact on me. You know, I think about the Maya Angelous, the James Baldwins, the Toni Morrisons, and so many others who have impacted me. Janet Mock, right? Elliot Page, Gina Rosero, right? You know, it's just wild the way that we can craft portals for people to experience what we experienced on their own time, right? That's cool.
That is really cool. Have you found that relationships have gotten stronger with people who are already in your life because of the book?
Some.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, to be honest, this moment, right? And I think like other moments, right? Like the moments of coming out as anything, right? Like those are moments that become defining. And, you know, a lot of us experience the shedding of relationships that don't fit anymore for whatever reason, or other relationships that evolve. And so, like, for instance, with family, I've been blessed to have a family that, you know, we have the strongest, most intimate connection we've ever had. And that's everyone in my family. And other friendships, right, that have just bloomed in new and different ways and been stronger. And then, you know, I've had other situations that have fizzled. And, you know, I think that's just life. And sometimes relationships serve a purpose and a moment and a space, and then you outgrow them or the other person does. So it's been a mixed bag. That's what I'll say. It's been a mixed bag.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. It's as you were saying earlier about like people be like have like, I mean, I'm now paraphrasing, a window into your world and like these intimate moments. As you were like, my sister, I was like, I know your sister's name, and like, and then you're talking about your family, I'm like, I already know everyone's name, and like, and then I was like, but that's creepy because we don't know each other and you never told me, but I read your book, so now I know, and that feels like an interesting dynamic, at least on my end.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess that's real. Yeah. And I've had that experience with folks, you know, like I was lucky enough to do Elliot Page's first book event.
I was there.
Oh, Oh, you were okay, right. So was able to do that, right? And it was interesting then because obviously I had to read to prepare for that first event and process and take notes. And the audience hadn't read it yet, and the world really hadn't read it yet unless people got advanced copies. So it's so interesting. I got to kind of experience that without kind of the media hoopla around it. Because, of course, he's a superstar. So there's like a whole surrounding experience to what they experience. But I also was just grateful to then have a similar experience in reverse where he did an event with me at the Brooklyn Museum. So, it's a blessing to again to tell stories on this level and then have people see why these relationships made me who I am, right? Like, I mean, a lot of people have been very grateful to witness my journey with my mom. And then again, those are only snapshots, right? So hopefully I'll have more opportunities to tell more of those stories.
I really like the description you gave of crafting portals for people to experience what we experienced, and I love that you added on their own time, which is important. Because I remember for sure there were moments in my just in my coming into self of like I wasn't ready for certain things. I wasn't ready to face parts of my identity, and so having access to those possibility models and those moments, those portals, and our own time is so crucial, I think.
It is. It absolutely is.
So in talking about access to queer and trans people's stories and possibility models, you are a co-founder of Transgender Week of Visibility and Action. And is this true that it started out only as Transgender Week of Visibility, and then did you add action later, or has it always been with and action?
For Chase Strangio and me, we've always kind of had this understanding that the visibility piece wasn't enough. And so the idea in 2021 was to how could we move people to be thinking more deeply about just the actual like state of our society and of politics and how it's impacting trans folks. I mean, when we were sounding the alarm about what was happening to trans youth in 2021, it wasn't a dominant narrative, even within community, about what was happening with legislation. I mean, the idea was still that this legislation wouldn't go anywhere. And these were fringe ideas that conservatives had about trans folks because there was this idea that, oh, well, HB2 failed in North Carolina back in 2016. So that's a done deal. But, Chase, with his prowess around the legal system and politics and my kind of understanding of us needing to get attention to these on the ground and grassroots initiatives and organizations that are our front lines, that kind of came together into Trans Week of Visibility and Action, TWOVA, if you will.
I will. I love that. I think that week is so incredibly important, and really pairing it with the action piece is crucial to this conversation and the fight that we are in. Do you know who Brian Derrick is? He founded Oath.Vote. Have you heard of that?
I don't. No, I mean, I haven't. I don't. And I don't know Brian, and I haven't heard of
I
Oath.Vote.
gotcha. He came with me to the Elliot Page and yours and Elliot Page's conversation. But anyway, so Oath.Vote is this grassroots fundraising platform, I guess, where he's a political correspondent and he scans the nation for the most crucial local races that are happening and funnels grassroots donations to local elections that matter that most people don't know are happening. And he's doing really incredible work. So I always like to, especially when grassroots comes up, like to shout him out because he's doing really cool work. And flipping after next, after the news about next broke, being, you know, in their death, Brian raised over $50,000 in less than 24 hours with donations less than $10 each, which I think is pretty cool, pretty powerful. So anyways, I don't need to keep doing a commercial for it, but anyways, I would recommend looking into it because it's a really cool, initiative that he started. Just wanted to put that on yours and everyone who's listening's radar, oath.vote, to help with those local elections. But so speaking of action items, so how did you say Tioa? It's fast approaching. Well, we're recording. It's this week. It's happening right now. What have you found to be the most successful way of getting folks to participate in this week of action and visibility?
I think folks just really appreciate the political education of this moment and how what's happening to trans folks is connected to what's happening to everyone else. Mm-hmm. So if we're talking about bodily autonomy, we're talking about not just people's access to gender affirming care, but also reproductive justice and the access to abortion, and the access to IVF and other reproductive needs. When we're talking about self-determination, it's not just about trans youth, for instance, being respected in schools, right? And non-binary youth having support around how they're addressed and the bullying that folks experience. That idea of self-determination is tied to voter suppression tactics that keep communities of color, for instance, from being able to make sure their voices are heard in their elections. So it's about making those connections. You know, we can't talk about the need for access to curricula that speaks to the LGBTQ plus experience without talking about access to curricula that speaks to the experiences of ethnic and racial minorities, right, within our country's history. So it's important for us to be able to flesh out those connections. And I think the political education piece is key, and people want action items, right? They want to know, okay, well, who should I donate to, right? Which speaks to some of the work we were just talking about. Mm-hmm. And which politicians and leaders do we need to hold accountable? Which institutions do we need to hold accountable? And so I think that those pieces are all key.
Yeah, for sure. I think definitely, well, obviously everything you just said, but what's resonating right now for me is this, the connection piece of, even if you aren't part of the queer and trans community, these laws will impact your life. And I've had so many, so in my day job is teaching diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging trainings, to different companies, organizations, nonprofits. And I try to be very explicit, and talk about what you were just saying around this doesn't just help, what I'm sharing with you doesn't just help the queer community. It helps all of us, because those connections, are just so, so crucial. So I'm so, grateful that the work that you and Chase, and your team, that all of you are doing are being so explicit about those connections.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You mentioned this a few times, and I'm fully on board and totally 1,000,000% agree with you around the power of stories and storytelling and, you know, giving the opportunity for folks to share their stories, which is why I love this podcast, because I get to speak with all different kinds of people and hear their stories. And you are part of two, you have two different podcasts. One is Afterlives and one is Queer Chronicles, which just launched. Do you want to tell us? I mean, I would love for you to tell us about both of those podcasts.
Yes. So I'm an executive producer over at iHeartMedia working on their Outspoken podcast network, which focuses on elevating LGBTQ plus voices and experiences. And so two podcasts that I'm hosting with Outspoken are Afterlives, which focuses on the stories of trans folks taken too soon. And this first season focused on Lailene Polanco, a 27-year-old Afro-trans Latina who died in Rikers custody in New York. Her experience really shone a light on mental health care and the need for understanding the experiences of folks who are incarcerated, but also folks with a history in sex work, and also her connection to ballroom community and all of the movements that she galvanized in the wake of her death, including the Stop Solitary Confinement movement, the decriminalizing sex work movement, and so much more. And then the other podcast is Queer Chronicles, which is a experimental podcast in terms of format. So we had 7 teens within this first season keep audio diaries on their experiences growing up in political battleground states. So we have a mixture of their audio diaries, but also some roundtables, some interviews, and so much more. So really excited that that has launched, and you can check out, you know, all of the first season of Afterlives wherever you get amazing podcasts. And the first half of Queer Chronicles is all out now in time for Trans Week of Visibility in Action.
Yeah, those are incredible. I listened to the first episode of Queer Chronicles and really appreciate just hearing from younger folks. I feel my podcast tends to skew folks closer to my age, which is almost 40. And so I really appreciated having a window into younger queer folks' experience. And I definitely need to check out Afterlives. Which reminds me of the Brooklyn Liberation March that you helped co-organize. Is that the right way to say that? Co-organize?
Yeah, definitely. One of the co-organizers of Brooklyn Liberation. And it was such a powerful experience in the summer of 2020 to work with some amazing folks on getting folks out to understand how Black trans lives are impacted by all of these systems of oppression. You know, this was a summer that felt so revolutionary in a lot of ways. So many people took out to the streets in the wake of the murders of people like Ahmaud Arbery and George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and Tony McDade. And we really wanted to shine a light on the plight of Black trans folks, because so often those are not highlighted in these larger discourses around how Black life is considered or not considered, particularly in the United States. So it was a powerful experience. And to your point, so much of that work has continued to fuel me in the type of storytelling that I want to do. I mean, at that first Brooklyn Liberation March in 2020, we had Lailene's sister, Melania Brown, speak about what it was like to lose her, but also for her to rally us to continue to fight for the life of her loved one. And then the second iteration of Brooklyn Liberation was in the summer of 2021, where we were focusing on the young trans and non-binary experience. And of course, you know, that speaks beautifully to what we're doing with Queer Chronicles. And it's all about making sure that we lessen the barriers for folks to tell their stories on their own terms.
Yeah, I love that. I was at the 2020 Brooklyn Liberation March, and it was so incredibly powerful to be there and just be among the literal thousands and thousands and thousands of people who showed up for Black trans lives. It was a moment I will never ever forget.
It was. It's just, I don't know. It changed my life, and I think it changed a lot of people's lives, and I was so grateful to be a part of it. Like, it definitely was one for the history books.
Yeah, absolutely. I hate to do this, but I do need to move us into our last segment, which is our lightning round of questions, which are just meant to be lighthearted and silly. Typically, lightning round questions are either or questions, but I was called in lovingly that those were too binary. So these are open-ended lightning round questions. And feel free to pass on any you don't want to answer. Are you ready?
Yeah, let's go.
All right. What is the name of your superhero alter ego?
Superhero alter ego. We're gonna say my drag name, Rebel DeVoe.
I love that. Where's your favorite place to think?
My favorite place to think is near bodies of water.
Me too. Who is an influential queer person in your life?
In my life before they passed, Monica Roberts, icon, award-winning blogger, writer. In my life currently, I would say Kyan Doreshow, who also was a speaker at Brooklyn Liberation in 2020. She's just an amazing powerhouse of an activist, internationally.
Amazing. What is a song that you can listen to on repeat forever?
I could listen to I'm Every Woman by Whitney Houston, but like the club mix that has like all the snaps and that's super long, I could listen to that on repeat forever.
I love that. Before any interview, I listened to Whitney's Higher Love with Kygo. It just makes me so happy. Anything Whitney does makes me so happy. Okay, what does identity euphoria feel like to you?
Identity euphoria feels like no expectations.
Oh, I like that. Where do you find joy?
I find joy in being around family and eating really good things.
Which is the perfect segue into my one binary question I could not get rid of, which is bagels or donuts?
Oh, well, I immediately thought of a nice raspberry filled jelly donut on the last question, so it's definitely going to be donuts.
Okay. There are no wrong answers, but bagel was the right answer. No, I'm just kidding.
But look, those are just different. It's so funny. Are there savory donuts? 'Cause like there are sweet and savory bagels, but I've never had a savory donut. But they're just different things. I mean, I'm more likely to eat a donut because the calories are lower. But on the bagel, if I can get a nice smoked salmon, cream cheese, and dill spread or like a scallion moment going on, I love it.
Yeah, we shouldn't be limited.
We should have. Oh, it was the frame of the question being so binary that was the problem, not my answer.
That's exactly right. It's for sure the question. Raquel, thank you so much for joining me and our listeners here today. I really appreciate it and so grateful for you and all the work that you do and all that you have shared. Thank you, and thank you for coming out.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
Thank you for coming out.